If you are listening to the sound of my voice right now, it means that you are listening to episode 2 of the Orange Media Network Sports Podcast. I am back as your co-host, Brady Akins, the sports editor for Orange Media Network Daily Barometer sports team, and I am joined by my co-host. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure, I'd like to introduce myself. I'm Andres de los Santos. I'm a sports contributor, and if you know me, you know I also go by the Swiss Army Knife, because I do a lot of things.
The Swiss Army Knife back with you, back with us. And the good news is that we got to record a second episode.
We didn't kick off the air yet.
Give it time. Not yet. I know that it's going to happen eventually. One day they'll figure out what we're doing over here and pull the plug. But until then,
we're still rolling.
Until then, we're still rolling, and we're still here to have a good time. And we have a lot to talk about today, actually.
We do, actually. A whole lot to unpack.
A lot of football to talk about, too, which I know, like, I know that we both want to talk about as many sports as we possibly can.
Of course.
Football is what's dominating the news cycle right now, as it's being the only sport that's kind of close to being back right now. And I feel like we owe it to ourselves to talk a little bit about it, especially because since last we recorded, Oregon State's football schedule dropped along with the rest of the Pac-12.
It did.
It's a 6-game schedule, which I thought they announced 7 games at first.
It was supposed to be 7, but then I believe what they're doing, I could be wrong. What they might be doing is that, so it's 6 games in the championship,
right?
And let's say Oregon State finishes 3rd in the Pac-12 North. I believe they will play whoever finishes 3rd in the Pac-12 South. I could be wrong, but I could be wrong. Because if you look on the Oregon State schedule for football, if you go like the Oregon State Athletics page, mm-hmm. under championship game, there is, like, it says versus unknown.
I have not seen that.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, you know, if you look that up, it makes me wonder, too. So that's what I was thinking, because Thompson and I were talking about it, too. We were like, what does that mean? And then he brought it up, actually, saying that we could be playing whoever finishes 3rd, 4th, or 5th. If we finish 3rd, 4th, or 5th, we'll play them. And the box, it's the versus is in orange, so that means it's a home game.
Right, I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, it says December 19th, which would be the day after the Pac-12 championship.
Yeah.
To be determined. That's really interesting.
I did notice that, too. Personally, I like that concept in general. You know, if you play against, you know, so if you finish 2nd in the Pac-12 North, you play whoever finishes 2nd in the Pac-12 South. I like that. It's kind of cool.
And I guess in theory it makes sense with such a smaller schedule, like a more condensed schedule, because I imagine you're going to have a lot of teams that kind of tie in record when you're only playing 6 games.
Well, I mean, you could finish 2-3. So one team could finish 2-3. Another team could finish 3-2, and they could still somehow be tied for 2nd or 3rd.
Right, yeah. That's a good point, too.
So I wonder how that's going to play out.
It's going to be fun to watch either way. Like, we're in such uncharted territory with this. Like, I know that it's going to be football, and, you know, it's going to look similar, but it's going to feel so different just watching it all happen without fans, like we talked about last week. Watching it happen
hopefully
in such
cardboard
a condensed
cutouts.
Form.
Hopefully cardboard cutouts. I'm still on that. Hopefully cardboard cutouts.
Still looking to get your face.
Still looking to get my face somewhere in there.
You should get your cardboard cutout in Reese. I'll put mine in Gil, and then together we've covered all of our ground.
We should put it in the press box too.
There we go. Yeah, I can.
Boom! Exactly.
Can set in a picture of me looking like I'm like deep in thought, like really pensive. Like I got a pencil up to my face, like like I'm really thinking about what's going on.
All right, Brady. How about this? How about I read you the football schedule and you give me your thoughts on the entire football schedule? I'll give you my thoughts.
I think I like that very much.
Okay, so. First game, Saturday, November 7th versus Washington State.
Okay.
That's at home. Next game, Saturday, November 14th is at Washington. This is Huskies. Next game, Saturday, November 21st is versus Cal at home. Friday, November 27th is versus Oregon. That's at home as well. Then Saturday, December 5th at Utah. That's away. And then Saturday, December 12th at Stanford, which is also away. What are your thoughts on that schedule?
I have a couple. There's two things that jumped out at me that kind of go hand in hand. One is all 6 of those teams are teams that we played last year. It's not. We're not getting any new opponents. Nope. At least compared to the 2019 schedule. These are all teams that we faced last year in 2019. The other part that jumped out at me is that these are all opponents we faced in 2019, and five of the six of them are teams that we lost to.
That's what I was going to point out. Exactly.
We lost to nearly every single one of these teams except for a 21-17 win against Cal on the road.
Yep.
And we lost to these teams in kind of varying ways. You look at the first game. We lost the most insane game of football I've ever seen in my entire life.
Oh, genuinely, that was the most insane game I've seen in a while.
Washington State had an 11-point lead in the fourth quarter, and then we had an 11-point lead in the fourth quarter, and then obviously we ended up losing it on the last.
Plus, this game was important because both teams had 5 wins. So the winner would go to a bowl for sure.
An excellent point. And like you're looking at it from the Oregon State perspective too, where mm-hmm. you have Washington State, who was a 5-win team at the time, like you were saying. Yeah. And then you have Oregon, who on the road, like a nationally ranked team, that's a harder game to win. You're looking of at course, this Washington yes. State game, and you're like, this is our big chance. Like, this is our opportunity. And then you lose it by 1 point. And listen,
it's got to be a heartbreaker.
As a fan, devastating. Absolutely devastating moment.
Oh, for sure. I remember watching my friends and we all just like, it's one of those moments where like you just stand there like with no emotion, you're just like hands over your face, jaw open, like what just happened?
You don't really know what to do with
yourself.
Yeah,
you don't know what to do. Exactly, yeah.
You don't know what you just watched, especially because, and this is the football nerd in me, I want to be upset about it, but it was such a good play call by Mike
It was
Leach.
A good play call. Yeah,
the last play of the game, and we're talking Mike Leach, and his air raid offense, and they call a draw play on fourth down to like win the game and head into a bowl game. I'm sitting there like, you know, fighting off tears, of course, but also course. Like that was such a good play call.
It was. Got to play devil's advocate. It was a good play.
But we lost games, high scoring games that were close. We lost low scoring games that were close. Like you'll see in our second game of the season against UW, we lost 19-7. I think mm-hmm. that our only score was
a touchdown by.
Was it a pick six? I thought it was a pick six. I could be wrong about that.
I believe it was a pick six.
I'm gonna say that it was a pick six. I like the sound of that.
Yeah, pick six.
We lost not close games, like the Utah game they'll have in week 5, 52-7. We won close games, like the game against Cal. So we've really, like, we have this range of opponents that we have all kinds of different experiences with, which I think is really interesting, too. It's not like they were all, like, close wins or, like, low-scoring games. Like, it's going to be a nice variety if all things stay equal going into the season.
Well, to be honest, one word that, you know, I looked at the schedule and I could only think of one word. I thought of revenge.
Yes.
This is the perfect opportunity for Oregon State to get revenge. Because like you mentioned, 5 of these 6 teams Oregon State lost to last year, whether it be close scores or high scores. This is the chance for Oregon State, the football team, you know, and the players to redeem themselves and to put Oregon State back on the map in the Pac-12 and just in the nation in general. This is the chance to just go out there and just proven why those losses were flukes, in a sense.
I agree. And if you're Jonathan Smith, like, I feel like you have to be looking at your team right now and saying, look at the schedule we have. We lost to 5 of these 6 guys.
Oh, yeah.
This is our chance to rewrite that. And mm-hmm. you look at it a little bit more in depth, it's even more than just revenge, because there's actual opportunities for Oregon State to win these games.
Right
at the top, like, Washington State, Washington, our first 2 games of the season, they were both decided by like less than 2 scores. It was a 12-point loss to Washington, 1-point loss to Washington State, like we mentioned.
Yep.
Both of those teams, a lot of turnover. They have brand new coaches coming into this.
Brand new coaches, brand new quarterbacks, brand new receivers. And, you know, one thing I got to think about is that, you know, Oregon State football teams in general started fall camp, you know, recently. Mm-hmm. But is it enough time for the quarterback and the receiver to make a connection? Is it enough time for the coaches and the quarterbacks and the receivers to make a connection? Is it enough time for just everybody to have a connection with each other so that they gel on the field?
It's an excellent point. Continuity is going to be such a huge thing.
It's going to be a huge thing. And Oregon State returning a couple players, you know, I think we really won't have that many problems with continuity. But a lot of these teams with new coaches, new quarterbacks, new receivers are going to have a lot of trouble trying to figure out who gels with who.
It's something we talked a little bit on the last show, but Tristan Jebbia obviously will, if it's Tristan Jebbia, could be Chance Nolan. Whoever's going to be the starting quarterback of the Oregon State Beavers will be a new starting quarterback. But if it is Tristan Jebbia, let's just presume for a second that it is because he has the most experience on the team.
Right.
This is still a guy that has a start under his belt, that's been in the system, that knows what Oregon State's going to expect him, has live game action in his resume. And you can't say that for a ton of the teams on this schedule, at least the first two that are bringing in new coaches, like we just talked about. Like, I can't imagine how difficult it must be for the people following up Mike Leach at Washington State and the people following Chris Peterson at Washington to try to install a new system just in general, but also in a year like this, where they don't have the benefits of a typical average season. They don't have the 3 out-of-conference games to, work out the bugs. Because you have to think about it, that's what the big colleges, like a big school like Washington, they like to do with their out-of-conference. They like to schedule the cupcake kind of teams so that they can prepare for the Pac-12. They don't get that anymore. And now they have to do it...
straight to conference play.
At least Washington has to do it without Jacob Eason, who was their starting quarterback last year. They have to do it with a brand new coach, trying to learn a brand new system. That's not going to be easy this year.
It will not be easy, just because, especially Oregon State, a lot of these players, they're coming back. Whereas, you think of some like a team like Utah, a good chunk of those guys either graduated or went to the NFL draft.
You could say the same thing about Oregon, too. We talked a little bit about Oregon. That last week, too. It's the same thing with Utah, like you just said. They're losing a ton of talent.
A ton of talent.
And, of course, Oregon State has holes to fill, too. They have 3 players that were drafted in the NFL, which I think was the most that we've had in quite a long time. So there's going to be holes to fill. But... I keep referencing our last episode. Something that we talked about too is that we don't have as many opt outs as like a bigger school like Oregon. We don't have any opt outs. I don't know of.
Yeah, I don't think Jonathan Smith has reported any.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything. And then you look at a school like Oregon. They got Diamador Lenore back, but it's still a team that lost so many players that were so crucial to their roster, and it's a little bit different with Utah because a lot of their players got taken in the draft, but that's still a lot of talent to replace.
It is a huge amount.
Bradley Anaiani, I think is how you pronounce his name, he was like one of the best sack artists in all of the Pac-12.
Oh,
for Utah.
I agree.
He's gone. You're missing such a valuable asset there. And when you look at Oregon State, it's a team that doesn't have to overcome as much continuity problems.
I agree. No, we have holes to fill, Isaiah Hodgins draft, Noah Tungiai, a tight end draft, Octavius Pierce, running back, Hurdle Master, love that man, Jake Luden, draft as well, but I think each of these, new positions, whether it be the quarterback or wide receiver, all these guys have some experience under their belt, so I think when they need to rise to the occasion, it won't be a difficult task, because they know these guys well, too, so I think it won't affect us it won't affect us as much as other teams.
I agree, and I think another big part of it is Jonathan Smith. I think that you can't understate the impact that having your coach back will have, especially a guy like Jonathan Smith, that you look at his track record over 2 years. He inherited, the nicest way I can put it, is kind of a dumpster fire, honestly.
I agree.
Coming in after Gary Anderson in that 1-11 season, trying to rebuild from essentially scratch, and you look at his first season, and overall, it's not pretty, let's just be honest.
No, of course not. I mean, no first season, unless you're like some miracle coach. No first season's ever going to be pretty, in my opinion.
Exactly, and especially with what he was inheriting. And then you look at year two. The development from year one to year two is so promising, because it wasn't just more wins. It wasn't just a 5-7 record. It was a 5-7 record where a lot of those losses were decided by one score, one or two scores.
Exactly, yep.
Against teams that would have blown Oregon State out of the water the year before. You look at a game like Stanford that we have on the end of the schedule.
Stanford was the closest game.
That was a 3-point game. That came down to a last-second field goal.
It was.
Washington State, last play of the game. We held Washington to 19 points. We were within striking distance that entire time. Oregon, a 14-point game. The only blowout that we had on the schedule from last year is the Utah game.
Yeah.
And so you look at a lot of these games, and they were winnable last year. And you have to think that especially be winnable now when you have that kind of coaching continuity.
And you look at the Oregon game as well. Nationally ranked, one of the best teams in the country. We held them on the road. Yeah, we held them to 24 points.
24 points.
That blows my mind too, because, you know, especially with Tristan Jebbia, he's not the starting quarter. He wasn't the starting quarterback. It was Jake Luton. He comes in, starts, and he only holds him to 24 points.
And now he's going to get an albeit abbreviated, but an off-season's worth of reps with the ones.
Yep.
He's going to be able to build on what he did last year, which I think was impressive coming in like very last second.
Very impressive.
I was in the press box covering that game, and I don't think anyone knew that he was the starting quarterback until he took the field.
No one really knew,
like,
anything.
He just kind of showed up. Like, he was just there as the starter. We're like, okay, I guess we're rolling with Jebbia. I think for like the first like couple of drives, I was like, did they bench Luton for some reason? Like, he's playing well. Like, did they bench him?
I was watching the broadcast, and, you know, I saw Jebbia playing. I'm like, who's this? but then the commentators are like, oh, Luton hurt his I think it was his hand or his thumb, something.
I can't.
And
remember.
I was like, oh, that's not good. And then, you know, you're watching the game progress, and I was like, Jebbia's pretty good actually. He's playing very well. I agree.
It's going to come down to a lot of. It's something that you were just talking about a little bit earlier. It's going to come down to a lot of, can he gel with the players on his team? Because that's gonna be the biggest thing for him. Like, can he come in and develop a relationship with his pass catchers? Can he, you know, figure out the offense to an extended level? Can he have a good relationship with his offensive line? Is he gonna be able to figure out all the ins and outs of having a good chemistry with his team? But if he can, I don't see why Oregon State can't have a really good record this year.
Exactly. Let me ask you this. Okay, would you agree that Tristan Jebbia is more mobile than Jake Luton?
Jake Luton is sneaky mobile, but probably, yes. Luton, for being like 7'9" or however tall he is, he's a sneaky mobile guy, and I kind of wish that he moved around a little bit more, but from what I've seen from Tristan Jebbia, I would agree that he's a little bit more mobile, yes.
That being said, do you think Oregon State is going to incorporate more plays where Jebbia rushes or where he throws?
I mean, I gotta think that they're gonna at least let him
at least attempt.
Let him off the leash a little bit. Like, I don't think they're going to run, like, the Baltimore Ravens, like, you know, Lamar Jackson.
No, it's just Lamar Jackson just turns.
Yeah.
Tristan runs Jebbia 90 yards in one play.
Yeah, 1,500-yard rusher in six games. But I think that he has a lot more rushing potential than someone like Luton might have had. And
you'll find out later he does have rushing potential, as I'll tell you that. We'll talk about that later. He has a lot of rushing potential.
Was that a tease? Was that a tease for a feature segment?
It's a
oh
tease.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't even know that was happening. That was completely off script.
You will be surprised. Let's just say Jebbia can rush. You'll find out later.
Jebbia can rush, and again, this is the biggest Jonathan Smith shill podcast that you'll ever listen to. I love me some Jonathan Smith.
Yes, but he does.
It's true. But he's such a creative coach and a really good offensive play caller that you have to think he's going to look at what he has and say to himself, what's the best way that we can win? Like,
of course
he's never going to be like the square peg round hole kind of coach, which so many kind of coaches are. They're gonna like come into a roster and say, I don't care what kind of players we have, this is the offensive system I've been running since the 1800s. I want to keep doing this. But a guy like Jonathan Smith, I feel like he's never going to do that. He's going to be a guy that adapts to what he has. And if he sees Tristan Jebbia as a guy that can be let off the hook and have some design runs, and I think they're going to incorporate that.
I would even argue that Jonathan Smith is one of the most passionate coaches in the country, just because I think, you know, he's played here before. He was a quarterback here. So I think, you know, he wants to replicate what he did for his team. He kind of feels like, if I was his shoes, let's say if I was Jonathan Smith, which would be a miracle, but if I was Jonathan Smith, and if I became the coach for Oregon State, I would do everything and anything in my power to make sure the football team is successful, because I know this football team has done so much for me and who I am as a person, as a coach. So I would put my heart and soul, which he does. He puts his heart and soul into every little thing on the football team to make sure they're successful, and he's going to do it again this year for sure.
That's a thing that I've heard about, not from a ton of people, mind you, but a couple people that'll be like, oh, great, you know, Jonathan Smith is good until, like, he leaves for a different job. What job is Jonathan Smith leaving for? Like, he was the quarterback here at Oregon State during the best run of their program history, quite frankly. Yep. Like, this is, I mean, I don't want to put words in the guy's mouth, of course, but you have to look at, like, the situation he's in. He has to be thinking, like, this is a dream job, man. Like, this is where, this is my alma mater. This is
how much better could it be?
You know, how much better could it be?
You're the head coach, Pac-12 football. How How better could it be?
Exactly. He's a Power Five head coach, the guy that he played at the school that he played football for. Exactly. I remember talking to Scott Barnes, the athletic director, for a story on Jonathan Smith once. And like he told me that like in his interview, Jonathan Smith was like wearing his Fiesta Bowl ring. Like he was rocking that like massive like bowl ring in his interview. And that tells you all you need to know about like his passion for the program and like what he wants to do, like you were saying.
I agree.
I think, to be fair,
I would wear that ring everywhere if I had it to.
Oh, I would never take it off. I would wear it in the shower. I'd be sleeping in it, like
going to dinner, just bring it out.
Like even not like a fancy dinner. If I'm going to like the Wendy's drive-thru, I'm rocking my Fiesta Bowl ring.
You purposely give him like you could be like you know like driving on the left side. You give it their right hand to wearing it.
Reach over my body just to show my ring. Hope yeah, that's right. I want a Fiesta Bowl once, just in case you were wondering. Yeah,
just in case you don't know. Quarterback, you know. I'm a coach now. Yeah, you know.
Not a big deal. I threw to Chad Ochocinco and TJ Houshmandzadeh. You know, it's nothing. It is what it is.
It's nothing, you know.
I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
So, let's just say the six games that we know of, right? Okay. So, Washington State, Washington, Cal, Oregon, Utah, Stanford to recap.
Right.
How many of those games do you see as wins?
Ooh, great question. I'll probably break down each game one by one.
Please.
Easier. Okay. Versus Washington State. Like you said, new coach, new quarterback, a lot of new things. We're kind of the same. So I feel like this will be another close game for sure. This is going to be a dogfight. But I think we'll come out on top this time just because I feel like, you know, these players, they're going to play with passion for sure. They always play with passion. But this game in particular, I feel like these guys have circled this game because they knew that, like, how to put this? So, being a former athlete myself, I know that I wrestled the same people a couple times. I've lost the same people a couple times. And I knew that every time I would wrestle them again, I would make sure, like, I would put everything, my whole fight, whole 9 yards. I was fighting till the end. And these guys are going to do the same thing because they don't want to feel the same pain that they felt when they lost. So these guys are going to go on top, they're going to hammer, and they're going to win. We're winning this game.
Let's think about that for a second, like hanging in that.
Yeah.
So, of course, Oregon State thinks that they can beat anyone. They're not going to, like, look at a school like Oregon and be like, oh, God, like, we're never going to beat them.
We're never going to – yeah, of course not.
But they had to have looked at that Washington State game while they're sitting there at five wins and think to themselves, like, this is our chance.
Of course.
We haven't made a bowl game in, I can't even, X amount of years.
Such a long time.
Such a long time. We haven't made a bowl game in a very long time. And now here we are against Washington State, a school that on paper, at least record-wise, is about equal with us, about even with us. This is our moment. And you come out of that game with losing by 1 point on the last play.
It's got to be a heartbreaker.
That is just going to add to that circle mentality.
That's fuel to the fire.
You circle that game, especially in week one. Because, like, you're going in, like, at least, you know, in theory, as healthy as possible, as motivated as possible, because you haven't been on the field in so long. Add that to the fact that they lost that game when they could have been bowl eligible by 1 point on the last play. That's just going to add to that fire that you're talking about.
I think Jonathan Smith is even getting them, you know, this team, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got to beat them.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I was them, I would certainly want to beat this team because revenge, like I said. Revenge.
Revenge is a beautiful thing.
Revenge is a beautiful thing. Indeed.
You look at Aaron Rodgers in the NFL, his entire season this year is fueled by revenge. Like,
it really is.
The Packers drafted Jordan 4-0. Love, and here we go. He's just going crazy.
Nah, man. I would get into that, but I want to keep this PG-friendly. So, next game.
Next, Washington.
At Washington. Another close game, for sure. Mm-hmm. New coaches, new quarterback, new receivers. This is going to get down to the wire. And to be honest, this could go either way. I really don't – I can't pick a I want to say Oregon State, but this could go either way, in my opinion.
It's a coin toss game for sure.
It's a coin toss game for sure. This is going to come down to the wire, in my opinion. But I'm going to say Oregon State etches it away. So I'm probably going to Oregon State, but this could go either way, in my opinion.
I think this is one of those games where legacy might skew our kind of – perception, because you look at Washington at least recently and like historically too, but they've been a really good program.
Of
like
course.
Under Chris Peterson, they made a college football playoff. They've been I don't think they made a Rose Bowl. They've been a very successful team.
I think it was a Rose Bowl
under his reign. Was it? They've been really good.
It was able.
They've been awesome under Chris Peterson. Yes. And so we might, you know, come into this game kind of like with a skewed perspective on Washington, because they're another team. No new coach, new quarterback. And by the way, Jacob Eason, he didn't get drafted like this, but he was viewed as a first-round quarterback for quite a long time. He could play. I remember thinking that watching him play that he's definitely not bad, if nothing else. And now they have to replace him. They have to replace Chris Peterson. I think that this could be a Washington team that we're maybe more scared of than we should be.
I agree with that. I do agree with that.
Call me an optimist, but I'm going to say win too. I'm going to say 2-0 so far.
Yeah, but, you know, like, these teams are going to fight for sure.
Oh, of course. I mean, all of them are, because we're talking about Oregon State, you know, being fired up for playing football again for the first time in however long. All these schools are in the same boat.
Mm-hmm,
they're all going to want to prove themselves.
Next game versus California.
California Golden Bears.
California Golden Bears. I love Oregon State, don't get me wrong. But I honestly think Cal's going to win this one just because the amount of talent they have, plus they have a lot of returning players. And, you know, the amount of talent that they have, even the game, it came down to the wire. But I honestly think that California gets the upper edge in this game. I hate, don't, please don't come at me. But I think that Cal's going to win this game.
Andres' email is, no, I'm kidding.
My phone number is, no,
I'm kidding. Direct all of your hate mail to Andres' Andres' home, which is addressed at.
But yeah, I think Cal's going to win this one. What about you, Brady? What do you think?
I really hate to sound like an echo chamber because, you know, I don't want to be like, oh, I agree with everything that you say.
Right.
But I really think you hit the nail on the head with the returning talent thing. Yeah. Like, you look at those You look at the Washington State games, and, like, that's a point that I've been hammering, but it's so valuable to have continuity in a season like this. Mm-hmm. When you don't have the off season that you normally would, you want to have time to be able to, like, establish your brand as a coach and find your footing as a player. And Cal doesn't have that issue. Justin Wilcox is still the head coach. Chase Garbers, I believe is his name, is still the quarterback.
Yep.
This is a team that has a really talented roster, and they could even have like a revenge thing going on too, because they could be like looking at this schedule, like Oregon State is a team that we lost to last year.
They could be circling.
They could this game. We could be the team that they're circling.
Exactly.
And so, like I said, I really hate to sound like an echo chamber, but like you look at it'll be week three. Tristan Jevia will have a total of 3 starts if he is the starter. Mm-hmm. In his career as a college football player, going up against Cal, that seems like a bridge too far. It seems there's going to be a game or two, hopefully only one, but a game that you should win that you don't win, and I think this might be it.
Yeah, this is like you said, I think Cal's going to walk away with this one. Mm-hmm. So far we're 2-1, not a bad start.
That's not bad.
Not bad at all.
I would take 2-1.
But then we get to Oregon. So, like many of these schools, new quarterback. You got a lot of the, what is it, offensive linemen or defensive linemen that are opting out?
Offensive, only one opted on the offensive line, but a lot of players drafted in like
NFL. Yeah, that is true.
That was a very, very old offensive line, with the exception of Payne Sewell, who did opt out.
He did opt out.
Yes, and that's a big, massive loss.
Huge loss. But same coach.
Same coach.
And, you know, Oregon in general is stacked with talent. I mean, it makes sense. Like, one of the top 10 teams in the country. They're stacked with talent. So I think, as much as I hate to say this, I think Oregon walks away with the win on this one as well.
Andres, we're in the same boat again.
Yeah.
In the same boat. One of these has to be different. One of these.
Okay.
One of these has to be different. Like, just like, out of sheer probability, one of these has to be different. Like, I have
we'll
to
get there one day.
At one point. But I think.
It just cuts us arguing.
No, you're wrong, and here's why.
But realistically, I would personally, if I was, you know, I would love to see Oregon State win all these games. But realistically, I love Oregon State with all my heart. But I do think Oregon's going to walk away with the win on this one. And, you know, Oregon and Cal, they're like contenders to make it to the conference finals. And I think they're both going to live up to those expectations.
I think that this game presents a huge matchup problem for Oregon State. that has struggled last year, and they got their act together a little bit as the year went on, but struggled last year defending the run. We we've talked a little bit before about how Oregon is not the same team that they were back in the 2010s. They're not the same Chip Kelly-like high-flying act. This is a team that wants to pound the rock early and often. They want to give the ball to their guys. And even though the offensive line is super depleted, like we talked about, I think that running backs like C.J. Verdell are going to make Oregon State's life difficult. And I think this game could be really close again, because you are breaking in a new quarterback if you're Oregon. But I just think that I look at what Oregon likes to do on offense, and then I look at what Oregon State's identity is on defense, and I can't help but think that this could be a problem.
Oh, for sure, it could be a problem. Oregon State's offense, or Oregon's offense, a lot of throws, a lot of deep throws, mind you. It's Justin Herbert.
He's got a cannon.
He's got a cannon for an arm. So I feel like unless the Oregon State defense studies the Oregon offense a lot more, which I'm sure they will, I can't see them winning this game.
I think that as much as I want it to go the other way, and I really think that this game could be close. I really do.
It's going to be close.
I think that this could be another dogfight, just like you're talking about with, I think it was Washington State. But I just, when you get down to it, I just think the philosophy of Oregon's offense compared to the matchup problem in Oregon State's defense is going to be too much to overcome.
And also, I'm going to call this now. Okay. Conference finals for the Pac-12 North. Okay. As much as I love Oregon State, I do believe it's going to be Cal versus Oregon. And I'm going to call it right now. I think California's going to win that one.
Really?
I'm calling it right now.
Really?
I feel like...
You think Cal comes out of the Pac-12 North?
I think Cal comes out of Pac-12 North.
I love that. I love Oregon State.
I love that. I mean, I love Oregon State, but I think Cal's going to come out on top.
That is an amazing
I'm calling take. It right now. And if somehow I'm correct, I don't know, I'll give myself a high five.
I'll think of something. I'll come up with some kind of like celebratory gift for you.
I'm calling it right now. I was thinking, I was like, realistically, unless, because Cal's dominant. Oregon, another dominant force. But I do think Cal's going to walk away on top of this one.
I think
that's just me. I might sound crazy. I probably am.
I think that Cal's a team that has the advantage more than a lot of teams of continuity.
They do.
And we'll see how much that factors into it.
All right, next game. Enough of my kooky predictions.
We got Utah to get to.
I bet you there's someone in the podcast right now like, this person's crazy. All right.
What the hell are they talking about?
What are they talking about? All right, so at Utah, it's December 5th.
52-7, in case anyone
forgot. Okay, yeah, 52-7.
52-7.
Yeah, that game, oh man. Last year was crazy.
I have an anecdote about that, actually, because I was covering this game back when we were allowed to, you know, be in person. I was in the press box of this game. And just the feeling, like, the overwhelming, like, just exhaustion that you could just feel in the room was palpable. And it's funny because, like, they tell you before the games, they're like, you're here to be reporters, you're not here to be fans. So, you know, like, no being, like, vocally supportive. But all the groans, like, whenever Utah did anything was just, like, it was really funny, actually. People are just like, oh, my God, like, again, really?
I was at the game as a fan. And mind you, people were leaving at halftime.
That must have been soul-sucking.
It was, because I was in the student section, you know, back when we were allowed to have games. And I was in the student section, and people were leaving at halftime. God. And the third quarter filtering out. And I stayed fourth quarter a little bit. I look at my roommate, I'm like, it's like 5 minutes left. He's like, you want to go? I'm like, yeah. And then my buddy stayed, my buddy Will. And then I remember I'm walking back, and I get a call from him. I'm like, yo, Will's calling me? And then I am like, hello? And he's like, he screams in my ear, oh, it's you just scored. I was like, it's 52-7 with 2 minutes left. And he was like, yeah.
I heard that too. I think like they put Jebby in actually. And, like,
they did put Jebby in, yeah.
Ended up like fumbling their way into a touchdown. Anyway, if you're looking for revenge games, like this is another
one. This is another huge one. I know I made some crazy predictions, but I think Utah's going to win this one as well. Realistically, just because their run game, it was the run game that really killed the defense, in my opinion. So I feel like Oregon State defense really needs to focus more on just more defense. But yeah, Utah's going to win this one. It won't be that bad of a score. It won't be a blowout for sure. I think Utah's going to win.
Yeah. You know what? do you know what?
What do you?
I think I'm gonna do it.
You're gonna do it?
I think that Oregon State wins this game.
Interesting. Why do you say that?
I think that Oregon State wins this game, and I'm gonna be honest. I don't have much other than a gut feeling about it. But
interesting.
Listen, Kyle Whittingham, the Utah head coach, is one of the best coaches just in football, I think.
I mean, clearly he murdered
he knows what he's doing, at least against Oregon State. And but this is another team a lot like Oregon that had a lot of really good players that are no longer on the team, especially on defense. Yep. Especially on defense. And I like to think that Oregon State has potential in every single game to make it a shootout.
Mm-hmm.
I think they did against Utah just because of how dominant their defense was. But when you lose that much talent, like even in late in the season, like it will be in week five, mm-hmm. that is hard to replicate. And I think if you give Oregon State an edge, if you leave the door open a little bit for them, I think that they can score at will. Like, you see that against Washington State when they put up 53 points. They still ended up losing, but 53 points. This is a team that could score if they really want to, even with Tristan Jebbia. You have a player like Jamar Jefferson, who we'll talk about a little bit later, that is coming back, and even without Archavis Pierce, he's awesome, honestly.
Yes, he is.
He is an awesome running back. You have Champ Flemings, who we all love, the 5'5" wonder himself.
He could jump 60 feet in the air.
He could jump 60 feet in the air. I've seen it. He jumped out of Racer Stadium. Talked about that last episode. he broke orbit, actually. And then he fell back down and ended up catching a touchdown. But this team that can move the ball and they can put up points. And like I said, I think if you leave the door open just a crack, Oregon State can make you pay. And I think that Utah, having to replace all those defensive players, even with Kyle Whittingham and even with some talent still on both sides of the ball, I can see Oregon State shocking some people. I really can.
I respect that. I'm put this disclaimer. I love Oregon State, okay? Don't get me wrong. I know I sound like I hate them, but I love them. Love the school. Love the program. I love Jonathan Smith.
You can't see it, but he's wearing a jersey.
I'm wearing my Oregon State football jersey.
He's got the colors. I can vouch for it.
All right, last game at Stanford. Okay, I think last year's win was a fluke. So we're going to beat them this year for sure. I'm calling it right now. We're beating Stanford.
I think that too.
Yep.
I think that too. I think
it would be ironic if we were by a field goal like 3 seconds left too. It would be so ironic.
Kind of a role reversal.
Exactly.
I think you could look at that box score, and this is a game that actually, like, I went with my friend and he dragged me away like after halftime, like, because Oregon State was just getting pummeled. Stanford was all over them. It looked depressing. It looked miserable.
Yep.
And then, all of a sudden, like, Oregon State started crawling back. It kind of circles back to what I was talking about with Utah. Like, if you leave the door open for them just a crack, they can make you pay. Mm-hmm. And that's what Oregon State ended up doing on offense. Like, they ended up just moving the ball and scoring, That game, like, if you make that... Did Stanford make the last second field goal, or did Oregon State make the last second field goal?
Stanford made the last second field goal. Okay. It was a field goal, like, 3 seconds left. That's how they won.
If they don't make that field goal... And that game goes to overtime. Oregon State has so much momentum, and we're talking about a completely different outcome.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking about Oregon State making a Patriots over Falcons-esque Super Bowl comeback. maybe not to the same extent, maybe not the same stage.
Shout out Nick Foles, beat Tom Brady again.
Shout out to Nick Foles, beat Tom Brady last night.
2-0. anyway.
Anyway, right. I think that we're talking about a completely different game, and even though that L in the final column looks a little bit ugly and gross, like, that's a game that Oregon State was right in it.
Yeah, we were struggled at first. That's, we came back pretty strong in
that. Exactly. And point being, Oregon State can definitely hang with a team like Stanford. Mm-hmm. They're definitely at that level right now. Stanford kind of take a step back in recent years, but Oregon State's taken a massive step forward.
Of course.
And they're a team that can compete, and I like Oregon State in that game.
So overall, I say we go 3-3.
I have them at 4-2.
Interesting. Okay,
I'd
so
be 4-2.
We shall see where that plays out.
And who knows? Yeah. I mean, the Pac-12 is a lot different than other conferences, and it just feels wide open. Like,
it does.
I'm looking at all the teams in the Pac-12 North, like, even, like, you know, the quote-unquote, like, heavy hitters like Washington and Oregon, like, those aren't the same teams as they were last year and years past. Like, this is a conference that could have a surprise kind of contender in the North. And like you have Miss Cal. Like, you think Cal's gonna win this?
I think Cal's gonna win.
And it's and in the Pac-12, like it's not absolutely insane. Like, any team I think has a chance at coming out of it, at least in the North. Course, yeah.
Full disclosure: if Oregon State makes the finals, I root for them. But I do think Cal's gonna win the North.
It's good to know that you're not gonna cheer for Cal for no reason.
What if it's Oregon State versus Cal? Oh man,
I have some decisions to make.
Decisions. I'll flip a coin.
Okay.
All right.
We'll move on.
Yeah, let's move on. Sure.
Let's move on. So,
I got some stats for you, Brady, and okay. I want you to guess. Okay.
We're gonna play a game.
Play a game.
Where my friend Andres here has come with. Picked five Oregon State athletes.
Five Oregon State players.
For the football team. It's a very football-themed podcast today.
Mm-hmm.
And he pulled their stats from 2019. And me and my terrible, terrible memory are going to try to guess what they were.
Okay, so we'll start with my favorite player on the team, Tristan Jebbia.
Tristan Jebbia.
Redshirt junior, 2019. So he started for one game, but how many games did he play?
Oh, my God.
I'll give you a hint. It's less than five.
Okay, this is tricky. This is tricky. Let's think about it. So we're including the Oregon game, of course, right?
Yes. He started that one, but he played in some other games. Almost said it.
This is gonna be my strategy from now. I'll just try to trick you into telling me what it is.
Almost got me. I was like,
That's a really good question. And I think it's actually good to think about, like, how much experience does he actually have? So less than five. He played against Utah. We talked about that.
Yes.
I don't think he ended up getting in against UW because that game was so close.
Less than five.
I think he played against Oklahoma State. I'm going to say three.
You're close. It was four.
God, what was the other one?
okay, it was Oregon, Oklahoma State, Utah. There's one more.
Are we sure it's not three?
No, it's. I swear it's four.
I promise. Listen, I'm gonna say I'm right until proven otherwise.
No, it's four. Cal Poly.
Oh, right, because I was thinking about it of games that Oregon State got blown out, but I forgot that Oregon State blew out another team. They blew out Cal Poly. Okay, so four. So he has a little bit of experience under his belt.
Got some experience. Okay, now, how many touchdowns does he have?
Oh my God. Okay.
Less than five as well.
Less than five as well. Are we talking like total, like, or just total. Passing? Okay, total. I want to say that he...
How about passing first?
Okay. I want to say that he... I could be completely making this up. Like, I could be completely fabricating, like, memories. Don't get me wrong. I want to say that he had a rushing touchdown against Oklahoma State. We're going to worry about that later. Stop laughing at me. I'm thinking.
No, you're right.
Oh, I was right?
Yeah. That's what I was hinting. Like, he has a rushing touchdown.
I'm so smart. Okay. I don't think he had a touchdown against Oregon. I could be wrong about that, but I don't think he did. He might have had it. I don't think he scored against Cal Poly either. Did he have... I'm going to say... I can't remember the games. I'm going to say two passing touchdowns.
You're correct.
Oh my God.
You are correct. It is two passing touchdowns.
Good job. Wait, was that really which games?
Oklahoma State and Utah.
Oh, right. Utah, right. I forgot. Mm-hmm. We got that they scored when he came on the field. Even though we just talked about that.
Now, how many interceptions does he have? Also less than five.
Oh, none.
One.
One, really?
He's got one. It was versus Cal Poly.
Man. Okay, so two touchdowns through the air, one pass, one interception, and then one rushing touchdown against.
Yeah, and then for funsies, he was 38 for 60 in passing.
That's not bad.
Not bad at all.
For a backup quarterback, like
exactly, yeah,
pretty good. Makes me optimistic. All
right. Now, Hamma Qureshi Jr.
Okay, and I want a disclaimer. I'm not lying. I am not making it up. We talked about Hamma Qureshi last week. I do not remember what his numbers are. I can't remember anything like from an hour ago. So just. Full disclosure.
How many sacks do you think he had?
I know it was a lot. Because I made a whole point about how
it was less than 20.
I mean, probably. I made a whole point about how he was like comparable to Chase Young, who was just like completely unreal.
You're gonna go back and listen to that episode?
I might have to. Oh my God, what's that over there? You should go check that out and then just pull it up. I'm pretty sure it was more than one a game, so it was more than 12. We're talking sacks, right?
Sacks.
Was it... Ah, oh, jeez.
You're right there.
Was it 14?
It was 14, you're correct.
Was it really?
It was 14, yep.
14 on the math. Dot?
It was pretty much two a game. Yeah,
oh my God. 14
on the dot.
Wow.
And he also had 20. He had 22.5 tackles for a loss.
God, that's crazy.
That's insane.
That's not normal.
It's not, no.
People don't do that.
All right, man. Now, how about Champ Flemings?
Okay, I love him.
2019, how many catches do you think he had? It is more than 30.
This is another guy that we talked about last week, and I talked about him as, like, the third receiver on the team, but he also didn't do, like, a ton in the passing game? You said more than 30, right?
More than 30, yes.
He was involved, of course. He had that awesome touchdown catch, but, like, it was mostly, like, the Isaiah Hodgins show through the air.
Of course.
I'm going to say, like, was it 45? Is it close?
No, you're way off.
No, it wasn't close. Okay.
It was 32.
Okay, 32. So that was, catches. Like, very, very close to more than 30. Yeah. Very. That makes sense, though. Because, like...
I got to help out a little bit.
You could see... you could see it, like...
Mm-hmm.
Jake Luton and Isaiah Hodgins, they just had, like, this chemistry, like... Luton was looking for Hodgins, like, every time he dropped back. So that makes sense. That makes sense. A lot to build off of, though.
So he had 457 yards. How many touchdowns did he have?
At least one.
At least one.
I want to say that he had one against UCLA, but it could be, again, making that up. I'm going to say two.
He had three.
Three. What was the other one?
Two at Cal Poly, one was at Washington State.
Washington State. Okay, so I made up the UCLA one then. That's another thing I do. I forget everything, but I also make things up. I just completely misremember things.
To be fair, the one thing I do, you know, I'm a punter / kicking fan of football. Of course. The one thing I do remember at the UCLA game was just that awesome, like, drop punt.
The drop kick.
The drop kick.
That was such an amazing play.
Love that play. I watch it, like, every day. Just, like, I go analyze it.
That's your little motivational video before you get out of bed.
Yeah, it is.
If the Oregon State could pull this off, I could do anything.
I could do it. I try in the field and just, like, I skew way right.
kick it over the fence, hit someone's car.
I hit Weatherford, like, oh, sorry.
There's a ball on the roof now.
It's just like the windows. I sing out the window. All right. Jadon Grant.
What about him?
How many interceptions did he have? Think of his jersey number.
Three?
Two.
Why do you lie to me? Why?
I got to keep on your toes, buddy.
I can't trust anything anymore.
It was two interceptions, and he had one touchdown. I believe it was Washington.
That makes sense. That sounds right.
He had a pick six.
Yeah, Washington gave him the one scores a pick six. It was probably Jadon Grant.
Yeah.
So not three, then.
Not three.
Not three, two.
I just got to keep on your toes, buddy.
You know, it makes sense. I got to be ready for anything.
You got to be ready. You're the sport that you got to know this.
I have to be ready for, like I said, anything.
All right. Last one.
Last one.
Jamar Jefferson. He was a running back.
Familiar.
How many yards do you think he rushed?
Oh, my God.
It is less than 700.
Less than 700?
Yep.
Oh, wow. I was going to guess, like, 1,100. And maybe that's not fair, because he dealt with injuries for a lot of the year. And he also had Artavis Pierce, like, also in the backfield. And I know that they did a lot together.
Yep.
So less than 700. Is this a lie, too?
No, this is real. I swear.
Is it going to be like, actually, he ran for 1,700
yards? It was 701, actually. No.
47 touchdowns. I'm going to guess, like, 535-ish.
More.
635-ish.
You're close. It's 685.
685. Okay, so he was right there near 700.
Right there.
I think that, like, now that I think about it a little bit, like, I had this idea of, like, Jamar Jefferson, like, in my head, like, playing a full schedule, but I forgot that, like I said, like, you know, he's competing with Artavis Pierce, and he was also dealing with injuries, so, man, maybe it's not fair for me to assume that he was a 1,000-yard rusher, because that's not easy.
Plus, he had 8 rushing touchdowns, too.
Did he really? Well,
yep.
He did a lot with those touches.
Plus, he's a good catcher, too. He received 9 passes, and he scored 2 touchdowns off that.
Ooh, that's not bad either.
Yeah.
Got to get him involved in the passing game more. Give him more than 9 catches next year.
Oh, for sure. Well, he's good. For sure.
Especially now that Pierce is gone.
I feel like he'll be more of a running back.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, he's proved he can rack up numbers.
I mean, he's a really good runner, too.
Yeah, he was fast. He's faster than you and me combined, so
I think. I don't know. I think he could do, like, a 4.2 40.
I probably a solid five.
Five on the dot?
Just a five.
All right, man. That was fun.
This is fun, yeah. Thank you for coming to my my game show.
Yeah,
this
quiz show. Jeopardy with Andres.
Jeopardy, or you'd say Jeopardy. Guessing
what,
numbers.
What is three interceptions?
Ooh.
All right, before we part ways, I want to do one last thing for the show.
Okay.
Last week you did an Oregon State Pro Spotlight. It's a little bit trickier now because there's really only one sport that's going on that Oregon State has athletes in still.
What sport is that?
Football.
Oh.
Sticking with it. Unless, listen, I'm not the hugest baseball fan, so I could be like frigging someone, and I apologize if I do. But Oregon State has more than a few pro athletes in the NFL. And there's one that I want to single out. And his name is Ryan Nall.
Sounds familiar.
Does anyone want a Ryan Nall background?
Sure.
Okay. I'm glad that you said that.
I'll answer for the people. Sure.
I'm glad that you said that, so I wasn't just sitting here awkwardly. So Ryan Nall, he used to play for Oregon State, obviously. Mm-hmm. He's been with the Chicago Bears now for 2 years, two seasons. If you remember anything from Ryan Nall, let it be this. The last time that Oregon State beat Oregon was in 2016. It was at home, and it was essentially all because of Ryan Nall.
Is it now?
It was. Can I read you some stats?
Please do.
If you don't mind. Ryan Nall carried the ball 31 times, which is a lot.
31 times?
He ran the ball for 155 yards on those 31 carries. He also scored 4 of Oregon State's 5 total touchdowns.
No way.
34-24. I am not kidding.
That is insane.
That's pretty good. And do you remember that game?
Vaguely.
I want to talk about that game for a second. I don't have the numbers like specifically for like the second half, but Oregon State went on this stretch where literally all they did was give the ball to Ryan Nall and have him run up the middle. And he got like 6-7 yards on every single one of those carries. Oregon could do absolutely nothing to stop it. Everyone in the building knew what was going on. If you pulled someone that's never seen football before in their entire life and just show them that second half, they could guess where the ball was going. It was going to Ryan Nall directly up the middle. And Oregon couldn't do anything to stop him. He was just running people over.
That is insane.
So he's kind of a forgotten figure in Oregon State athletics, but he should be considered a legend for, if nothing else, that game alone.
You score four of the 5 touchdowns in the game.
In the last win against your rival, in the last time you beat your rival, that was how you did it. Like that's
a way to go out.
He should get a statue. He should get a statue.
Oh, Rhino statue. Can we get a Johnny Hecker statue too?
We can get a whole bunch of statues. Let's just start a petition for like 15 different statues in front of Reese.
I'll take a picture of Johnny Hecker and everything. Just get that statue. Can we get it with him kicking a football?
We can do anything, buddy. We can start any kind of petition we want.
I'm gonna call Scott Barnes right now. Scott, hear me out.
I got a proposition.
Great idea.
Buddy. And I wanted to single out Ryan Nall because he came into the year as the number 3 running back on the Bears, but he was behind Tariq Cohen, who unfortunately had a season-ending injury.
Yeah.
Right now, he is the number 2 back since Tariq Cohen got injured. So he's listed as the number 2 back, but he hasn't really had any reps to show for it. He has 1 carry this season for 2 yards. The Bears played last night, recording on a Friday. They played on Thursday against the Bucks.
That game was very good, by the way.
That game was fun. That was a fun game. I'm glad that we finally got a Thursday night game with like 2 good opponents. But anyway, the Chicago running backs were not particularly good. David Montgomery is a starter. He had 10 carries for 29 total yards. That's 2.9 yards a carry. Cordarrelle Patterson, who's not a running back, he's like a wide receiver kick returner. He ended up with 3 carries over Ryan Nall for some reason for 7 yards. So it's not like the competition in front of Ryan Nall is particularly like, you know, strong or demanding.
Well, then again, it's Cordarrelle Patterson, you know. He has a 109-yard, return?
Kick return, yeah.
And that awesome. record can never be broken. It can only be matched.
He's fun. He's great, but he's not a designated running back. Ryan Nall is, and he's the number 2 running back on the Chicago Bears.
Yeah.
I think I saw him, I watched that entire game, I think I saw him on the field once, and he had a false start, and then he got taken off the field. But, but his next game is against the Carolina Panthers, who have one of the worst-ranked run defenses in the NFL. They're playing.
Glad you brought that up.
They're playing on October 18th. which might be, I have no track of time, which might be this week if you're listening to this on the week
that is supposed to go out. A Sunday.
Yes. So yeah, it should be coming out. They should be playing this week. So watch out for Ryan Nall, because he hasn't been featured very heavily, but they're playing a team that can't stop the run. He's the number two running back. He might get some carries.
I'm excited to see what Ryan Nall does. Ryan Nall does.
I'm excited too. And you know what? I'm excited for the football season.
Same here.
Well, I think that
I think we covered everything today.
I think we got most of it covered. Yeah, we talked a lot about the schedule. Talked about
our predictions.
I busted out my unrivaled optimism in Oregon State's 4-2 projected record.
Talked about how Cal is going to beat Oregon if they make the finals.
Talking about how Cal is going to play in the Pac-12 championship.
I bet you I'm gonna be standing like outside and someone's gonna tap me on the shoulder and they're gonna be like, "Did you really predict that?"
You're the guy.
I'm the guy now.
You're the guy. It's him. Cal. Get him.
Some mom like pulls the kids away. Get away from him.
You don't want to associate with that guy. He thinks Cal's going to win the Pac-12 North. But you know what? This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun, as always.
Until next time, guys, thank you for listening. And I will see you, or talk to you, I guess. Not see
I'll
you.
I'll talk to you...
next week.
Next week, yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff. Till then,
good stuff.